Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters.
Yeah.
So we were rambling on about velocipedes and ordinances
and things that got passed. And
Actually, I'm going to throw one last little reference to the city council meeting of the things other than the late order that we want to talk about.
Yeah.
Which is that there was an order. You know, I think it's well-intentioned. It might even be a good idea to sort of put a prominent tree in the front of City Hall.
Oh, yeah. What was that
okay?
about?
I think it's because right now there's...
There was a tree taken away
politically
there?
No, there wasn't, but there...
Oh, I thought there was in some corner there was.
There's politically, you know, everybody's talking about the tree canopy
yeah.
and loss of canopy, whatever.
Yeah.
So I think people sort of want to capitalize on the symbolism of doing something kind of prominent in front of
mm-hmm.
City Hall.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of the incentive for wanting to put a kind of, you know, a real serious tree in front of City Hall.
Okay.
But... You know, again, back to the issue of institutional memory.
Yeah.
I couldn't help but think, because I was there at the time, when Kathy Bourne was a city councilor,
right.
and vice mayor for a time, you know, and she was an architect, so she really thought about building and what
mm-hmm.
they should
public
look like.
Public space, yeah.
And, you know, she made the point that the way City Hall looked at the time, this was in the late 1990s, I believe,
mm-hmm.
There was ivy was growing over the front of the building.
Perimeter hedge.
I refer to them as spruce trees, but they were actually yews that had
yeah.
sort of grown to tree
okay.
size.
Oh, you have a little... Is that the photo right there?
Well, there's a photo. Actually, let's actually
is
take
that,
a look at that here.
Yeah.
Just to sort of show. It's a very small little photo
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it's right here.
But if you look at that, the prominent picture probably from the late 1800s and early
yeah.
1900s of City Hall.
So there's shrubs here or something.
Right, so there was a low hedge.
Right.
But that even the hedge came somewhat later.
Yeah.
In the early pictures, there was no hedge.
But there was this tree, though.
That was
on the street.
That's out
yeah.
of the street level,
yeah.
right?
Okay.
But the thing is that I think it was very much intentional to actually have the building itself be
yeah.
the statement.
Right.
Right, architecturally and otherwise.
Okay.
A real prominent
mm-hmm.
presence on the avenue. So what had happened over time is these yews had grown up on either side of the main entryway.
Mm-hmm.
It was an interesting thing because whenever you'd walk into City Hall, you'd hear these birds like screaming at you because they were filling up the yews.
Yeah,
but the truth is that it was actually covering up some of the windows. And it was a maintenance,
right.
becoming a maintenance
I
issue.
I must have remembered that. I was here. Yeah.
But I think it was Kathy Bourne, and mm-hmm. maybe Kathy Bourne, together with Charlie Sullivan from the Historical Commission, actually recommended that the building, the look of the building be restored to where it was when it was originally laid out. And that meant taking down those trees
mm-hmm.
and actually removal of the hedge, the perimeter hedge around
but
the front
it,
of the
Did it always have those two levels, though?
As far as I know,
like
yeah.
Little,
it was kind of like
bullet?
A terrace
yeah. okay.
front. And something that I did not anticipate, but it happened very quickly after they removed the hedge, and
mm-hmm.
is that the front of City Hall became this magnet
yes.
where people, especially in the summertime, would gather
yeah.
on the grass in the front of City Hall.
Great place.
And in the summertime especially, people would be there bare-shirted and, you know, sunning themselves on the front of City Hall. So it's sort of like the Central Square Beach.
Is that what
right?
led to the one of the policy orders about games? Did that ever
yeah.
come to fruition?
Actually, Council Mallon wanted to have, like, puppies
always
in front
puppies,
of City
yeah.
Hall.
But also, wasn't there supposed to be games or some
yes.
equipment? Was
yeah.
that, did well, that ever
was,
happen?
It had, as far as I know, it hasn't happened.
Okay.
But the thing is that, you know, so I think it would be kind of nice to have a tree, but on the other mm. hand, there are other interests, you know.
Mm.
Would that, you know, when they do the big dance party, would having a tree right in the middle of it kind of be a hindrance to that? Or
yeah,
not?
They'd be just climbing up the tree.
People be climbing up, probably ripping
that's
branches
once,
off the tree.
That's once a year. I mean,
yeah.
Councillor Devereaux pointed out that by the time that tree is really grown, they're going to welcome the shade because it's going to be so hot most of the time. So I thought that was an interesting
I know,
comment.
But it's also sort of a way of justifying it, too.
Well,
but in any case, whether it happens there or someplace else, and some of the councillors actually did refer to maybe it could be someplace else, but...
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's not a bad idea to sort of make a statement by planting
yeah.
a magnificent tree in a very public
mm-hmm.
place and sort of creating a focal point around
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, having like, you know, the Charter Oak in Connecticut or, you know, the Washington Elm
mm-hmm.
was one of the world's most famous trees in the
mm.
perimeter of the Common in
yeah.
Harvard Square. You know, having a tree as a focal point is actually kind of part of the city's history. But when I own several pieces of the Washington Elm.
Wow. But when you say focal point, I think of something in the center of something, and that really couldn't be there.
Right. So the thing is,
it would be either one to one side or the other, and then it's...
Well, you know, if you're a city council, you think of City Hall as the center of the universe.
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily true.
Yeah, but it would take a... Well, yeah. Okay. I think a tree would be nice.
I just don't know where. So do I. Yeah.
Sort of to the sides, that's all. Probably to the side of Bigelow.
Actually, on the Bigelow side, there is like a mulberry tree that's...
Oh, yeah?
I don't think it's the best specimen tree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe with something that grows to be 100 feet tall would be a lot more interesting.
I just think that would be less hindrance to people gathering if it was on that side.
Right.
Of the city.
But I actually respect Kathy Bourne's perspective. Mm-hmm. And again, we'd have to talk to Kathy to really get the word on this. But,
yeah.
You know, the thing is, there is something about allowing the architecture of a building to be the statement, too.
And
putting a tree in front
statement.
Of it is not always
Well, obviously, it's not going to be in front of it, Robert. So maybe it's a moot point.
We'll say. Anyway, so that was one thing that was sort of in the queue.
Yeah, there weren't that many orders. It was just three.
There wasn't that many orders.
Yeah,
and
then
some of them were pretty non-controversial.
Well, order three, I don't know what that was. You don't have it on here. I guess it didn't concern you that much. You remember what that one was?
Not really.
Okay. All right.
It was only four. And then what happened was, and normally I go up to City Hall for this, but I stayed home last night.
Smart.
And so I was sort of watching on the TV, and then they started making
Watching on the computer. You don't have cable.
Excuse me. That's right. I was watching on the computer. But they were sort of making reference to the late order. And I said, What's that? Normally I get a copy of them up there.
Oh.
But I was able to download a copy of it.
But it had it on the computer.
And that's how I got it. That's
right.
Okay.
All right.
So the thing is so there was this order, which is kind of an interesting matter.
Yeah.
I'll just sort of say kind of on the quick here what
it
says here. But it's the order actually calls upon, it was what basically the background was, is that the governor, and not just the governor, but the governor's staff. I think I have a feeling some of the people who were involved in drafting this.
So it came from the governor's office?
They propose a bill H.4075,
right.
An act to promote housing choices.
Right.
Okay. Now, the background, and again, we can get into some of the details of this insofar as I understand them. But the background really is that if you look at a lot of suburban communities, they were very resistant to allowing things like multifamily homes, any kind of density, apartment buildings are sort of right out sometimes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, they have one. They insist on like you know, a quarter acre per house, and really zoning that basically requires so much space that it's just never going to be possible to have any level of you know, the kind of housing production that's necessary to support the population as it is and as it is growing.
Right.
So you know, the state passed Chapter 40B some years ago, which is what they call the SNOP zoning legislation, that gives a housing developer of quote affordable housing end quote the capacity to file for a comprehensive permit and bypass a lot of local zoning restrictions if they're producing a particular type of housing. So there's a little bit of a precedent of the state intervening to try and kind of go over the top of local resistance to housing development. So, you know, I always couch everything in terms of that as a background.
Yeah.
So now this is something different, and I'm a little unclear where this is
going to go. Who introduced this bill, do you know?
It came from the governor.
But it's a House bill. But who sponsored it then?
Probably a bunch of people. But it was.
Yeah.
But it came
Act to promote housing choices. Okay. But
right. But the governor can introduce legislation too.
Okay, but I'm just curious who's. They still had to have House sponsors, right?
Yeah, and I'm sure there was a nice list of the sponsors.
Probably.
So again, not to get into all the details of that, the whole bill, though you can get
it. It's highlighted in the agenda.
There it is. There's the whole House bill.
Yeah.
You know, with a message from the governor.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
And it you know, makes a lot of definitions about things like transfer of development rights, you know, apartment, you know, districts and whatever. I'm probably getting some of the terminology wrong. There's references to accessory dwelling units that are like we passed with the Barrett petition. Allows the use of some.
So it's more comprehensive than just saying zoning require a simple majority.
Right, but the reason why it's making all these references, these particular ones, is so they can make clear to what the big part of this is really about. So zoning law in Massachusetts, and this is not true for all states in the area, mm-hmm. requires a two-thirds majority vote either of your local town meeting or your city council.
So regardless of your form of government, your town, you have to have two-thirds.
Yeah, it's a two-thirds. Wow. Now, I wasn't around when that was established, and nor do I know when it was established, except that I know zoning legislation dates back to the 1920s. And I'm pretty sure, I'm going to guess here now and say that the reason for the two-thirds requirement is that there was a belief, and maybe it's a correct belief, that property rights are kind of akin to constitutional rights, and that simple majority votes to would
negate that.
To negate property rights or constitutional rights, maybe it's not the correct standard. So for whether it was a good or bad, it was established, at least in Massachusetts, that you need a two-thirds vote. Not only that, but, you know, though it doesn't get invoked very often, if there's a zoning proposal, like somebody wants to change the zoning in Cambridge, and it requires a two-thirds vote, if 20% of the ownership of the affected area, right, and the city clerk has to, and the public works department have to figure it out to make sure that that threshold has been reached, if more than 20% say we don't like this, that forces an even higher requirement of a three-quarters majority.
Is that just in Cambridge?
No, that's state law.
Oh, okay. So right now you need two-thirds, but it could be three-quarters.
So typically to pass zoning in Cambridge, it's you need 6 out of 9 city councilors to support it.
What would be three-quarters, though, when you only
then
need 9?
Then it bumps it to 7.
Oh, 7. Yeah. Okay.
Now, the truth is, and this is the reason why I'm not so sure that I agree with this, is that pretty much every zoning proposal that has come back through in recent memory that really was worth its weight at all didn't have a hard time reaching not only 6, but 7 or 8 or even 9 votes. All right? Because people kind of would work it out.
Right.
I'm a little concerned about
having lower that threshold and
proposals then, where, say, do you think we can squeeze out 5 votes to push something
especially
through?
Especially with the way things sometimes
Now, let's be clear, though. This is not a blanket change to a 50% requirement rather than a two-thirds requirement all across the board. It's only specific to particular housing-related zoning changes.
Okay.
All right? So it wouldn't apply for everything. So there would have to be a determination made whether a particular zoning proposal fits into the category where this lower threshold would be met.
Do you have an example of that?
I think it's like it might actually even be things like the affordable housing overlay, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
Because the thing if it involves relaxation of setback requirements or height standards or whatever for the purposes of promoting affordable housing, right?
Seems to me that's what's behind it a little bit, don't you think?
I think it is.
Yeah.
But there's some oddities about this, things that are actually causing me a certain amount of concern.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, if you want to change the zoning if it requires two-thirds vote, it's either way. So if you say, we got two-thirds of the council are in support of upzoning something. And then maybe 20 years later, two-thirds of the council decides we want to downzone something. You can go up or down. You can change the zoning one way or the other way, but either way, it takes the same two-thirds majority.
Okay.
The weird thing about this is they say it takes a 50% majority to go one way, but if you said, wait a second, we're having second thoughts, we think that maybe having that level of density here is not what people want.
Yeah.
Then it'll take a two-thirds majority to change it back.
Yeah, but that's what it says there?
That's part of the state of the proposal of the law.
Well, that's confusing. Yeah.
I just think it should be the same standard regardless.
Exactly, right.
I also have some concern that if you have if you lower the threshold to just a flat-out 50% threshold, then in fact that becomes, I think, almost automatically a major criteria in deciding who should be elected or not in local town councils.
Oh, well, that's for sure.
It'll become because they say, well, you better not vote for so-and-so because they're going to vote this way here. And all it takes is 50%. So we have to really, really do this. So it politicizes things even more so than it is today.
Right.
So I have some concerns about that.
Right.
Right.
Whereas the other one, you need more compromise.
And the other thing I'd say about that is that if the intention here is to force some of our suburban friends to permit more liberalized zoning, have greater density or set aside areas for apartment buildings, which I think would be a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
If that's the intention, but the problem is that they're very resistant, there's a pretty darn good likelihood that the majority of people in those towns are going to still want to be restrictive.
Right. So it doesn't matter if it's 50%, right. They still get the...
So if the places where you really say you want to see this housing development happen are this suburban town, this suburban town, that suburban town, there's a darn good chance that they're all pretty much going to uniformly say no with majority votes. And the only people who would then take advantage of this would be places like Cambridge and Somerville.
So I
have some concerns because I think Cambridge is doing plenty.
I do too.
And the notion that somehow we're the bad guys that need to be sort of brought, you know, wrestled to the ground to get us to do the right thing to produce housing of a certain type kind of flies in the face of what we're already doing. So I'm a little unclear about this legislation. The builders want it because it gives them opportunities to build. The subsidized housing advocates apparently are for it because, you know, they would be giving an advantage to subsidized housing production as well. So you sort of have two different camps all sort of joining forces in support of it, you know. But I'm a little concerned about how this may play out politically. Mm. So anyway, that legislation is for the legislature, but they have not acted on it.
Because it didn't come out of committee, I guess, at the end of the session.
Right. So I don't know what its future really is.
Yeah.
I could certainly understand.
Oh wait, they're still hoping to pass this bill before year's end. So they must be in session. Year's end is
Right? The state legislature, I think. Oh. They can do that. They can certainly do that. There are some unanswered questions for me personally about this, and I would love to see more housing growth in some of the near suburbs. But my concern is that you won't get it, and all you'll do is you'll basically just lower the bar for Cambridge.
Let me ask who's a member of the Massachusetts Municipal Association? Is that just administrative people?
Because
you said it represents, they're all supportive, and it's all 351 cities, but who are those? Those aren't the councilors, those aren't the
No, I mean, it's the cities themselves are the...
It's the city government.
Yeah, they're the ones who are who pay a membership fee to be part of
all
that.
All right, so...
So anyway, I think this needs a little more discussion and debate. So Denise Simmons introduced an order saying, let's support this.
Right, and then immediately
exercised her charter right on her own late order.
Right.
Which is, honestly, somebody should have exercised a charter right anyway because...
This is not
a small thing.
No, it isn't. No.
To say we're 100% on board behind this.
Right, that's a whole different thing.
Because you're fundamentally... Zoning is kind of a big thing.
It's affecting your role as a counselor and your whatever.
And I have some concerns personally that this is also being done part and parcel with other efforts that are now underfoot, like this affordable housing overlay, to basically lower the bar so to make it easier to pass what they want to push through regardless and to minimize debate. Right. So if you put this in as a late order and when nobody even knew about it, nobody had a chance to speak to it, that would have not been viewed as transparency.
Well, if she hadn't charter, somebody else would have.
I think, would have.
Actually,
So it'll come back, I think, at next week's meeting.
Now, you know what policy order 3 was? Because that actually was the airplane noise reduction. What do you know about that? That was also charter right by Kelly.
I don't remember exactly why, other than the fact that he had a certain perception about what the right way to do this was and what the right standards were, and he really has thought about it.
Yeah.
And I think it was Jan Devereaux was recommending removing certain features to sort of make nice with some of the neighbors. And
Craig was somebody in public comment brought up that other towns were trying to bully or something. So I guess it's generated. I didn't even know about this. So
I mean, I have to say, as somebody who grew up in Whitestone, New York.
Oh, you had planes all the time?
Where we had...
is it LaGuardia?
LaGuardia.
Yeah.
So the thing is, we had planes flying low.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Anybody who used to watch New York Mets games knew that there were times when they're interviewing a player on the field, they have to stop and wait for 30 seconds till the plane went overhead.
That's funny.
Right? So, I know what it is. And you do sort of acclimate to it, but it isn't always the most pleasant thing. And then occasionally a plane crashes, and it's really not so pleasant, but that's really rare.
Yeah.
So what is this?
I mean,
so what happened was there were some changes at the federal level.
Okay.
I may have this wrong, but I heard it had to do with efficiency, fuel economy, and whatever.
Oh.
Where
if they if you were to
have planes take off over the water, let's say because you didn't want to disturb as many people, but that was the least efficient way to do it. It might cause a lot of fuel to get dumped to take off. So ideally you fly into the wind, and if the wind happens to be coming from the west, then you should be taking off into the west, right? But the thing is, so you have certain flight paths which are common. So apparently what settled in was that there was, I think it was maybe with the opening of a particular runway at Logan, there was tended to be a bit of a concentration of a flight path in certain places, including bending over a portion of North Cambridge.
Hmm.
So there's this Fair Skies group who was organized with people in Belmont and Cambridge and whatever. And, you know, and they're pretty hot about this.
Why? Because it would make people... fly over those communities?
Well, the thing is, they feel it's going over their communities, and they want it to be dispersed more, so to kind of share the burden, right? Because they're concerned about, like, every 40 seconds a plane comes
overhead.
When you
say they, you're talking about Cambridge people, or...?
It's Cambridge, and not just Cambridge, but people in some of just west of the
but,
western
But who is fighting us? I mean, one of the comments.
Well, the thing is that, you know, I think everybody knew that planes would take off or land, and, you know, if you're living in Winthrop, you're used to plane noise. If you're ever in South Boston, planes are coming over pretty close by there. So the thing is that if you change the pattern, the way planes have to take off and land,
so it's
in such a way
encompassing
that,
more area.
Well, or you know, if the wind, let's for example, if the rule was you have to fly into the wind, and the winds more often than not were always coming from the west, then more often than not you would have to take off into the west
to the western suburbs,
right?
Okay.
So the question is should the standards be changed so that you take off in particular in different ways to be fairer? So
yeah.
You know, it's something where I think some people are very passionate about this, right? But then there's always the issue. You say, well, if we're people from Cambridge, we don't want the planes coming over here. Why don't they go over Somerville? Then the people in Somerville say, well, wait, what happened here? Why are we getting it now, right?
Is it that far, Cambridge and Somerville, that a plane wouldn't encompass both? I think it's more the suburbs.
The way sound travels, it dies off as an inverse square. So if you go directly overhead,
the mathematician,
you know,
you
get it kind of directly.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were, you know, if your plane was off at 45 degrees there, it's actually, it could be like half the volume or something. Mm. So, you know, so anyway, it's a real concern.
People
have been going on, especially people around... I mean, I see this come up in the Fresh Pond Residents Alliance listserv periodically. The issue comes up. So it's been around.
Well, I guess there was a meeting in Belmont, which
it was already last night as well. Yeah. So they're trying to settle that out. I don't really know how it works out. You know, and it is sort of an irony that, in fact, if it's energy efficiency and, you know, being as green as we can be, but that conflicts with also being noisier than we like.
Well, I think the main concern was at night. Waking people up versus they've gotten used to it during the day. It's
they're willing to accept it. Yeah.
So, and it seems to me they could do something about that.
It's true.
You know, maybe from 10 o'clock to 6 or something. I
certainly don't mean to be harsh in any way about it, but some people are super sensitive too.
Yeah.
And they're just not willing to.
Well, in the summer they would be if they don't have air conditioning.
Listen, there are certain types of sounds even around my, you know, sort of quiet little hamlet of mid Cambridge.
Yeah.
Where if I have a neighbor who's talking out on a balcony late at night, and I can hear every word, it'll drive you crazy.
Yeah, but if it doesn't happen all the time, you sort of put up with it.
But if it was only every Friday night when they were having some people
every Friday
over,
night, that would bother me.
That would bother me too. Actually. But if it was
once in a while, you go okay, fine, right?
You know,
but
roll
this is
with
every night. This is airplanes.
Yeah.
Every night.
So I think it's the relentlessness of it that can really drive people batty.
Right.
And I can certainly be sympathetic to that. You know,
yeah.
So, you know. So anyway, so that was one of the other items that was afoot there. You know, I think maybe one thing I was just noticing though, just to get back to ordinances and whatever that occurred to me was that I was looking at the zoning, the table that I maintain of all the pending zoning ones, and the cannabis zoning.
Oh.
Right? The expiration date is actually December 31st, and unless I'm mistaken, I don't believe it was passed to a second reading.
Oh.
And their next meeting is Monday. This coming Monday, the 17th.
You're talking about the City Council.
City Council.
Yeah.
And I don't know that they have a meeting on Christmas Eve.
No, of course not.
And it wouldn't matter, since the expiration date is New Year's
Eve. Well, actually, I don't know. Maybe they do have a meeting on Christmas Eve.
It's possible.
I doubt it. But
the thing is if I'm not mistaken, they may actually have to let this one expire and then do another round of it.
Yeah. You know what? Considering the fact is that
there's not that much in the way of recreational marijuana places opening yet anyway. So maybe it's not that big a deal if they kick the can down the road just one more cycle. But I somehow thought they were going to pass that and get that off the table before the year's end.
I know nothing about it. I don't want to know anything about it. All I know is I see different shops. I'm wondering whether it Blue Smoke Shop.
I know of at least two places down in East Cambridge that are starting out as medical marijuana dispensaries.
Yeah.
Several others. And they're all trying to get their foot in the door to be able to then open as recreational marijuana places. Because be quite honest, because it's potentially very lucrative.
But if you see, they made $5 million in like a week.
Well,
or
I mean, that's
crazy.
Yeah. We'll see whether that sustains itself.
I know I'm getting old when I just say, please.
There is I think there. You know, that's something that'll be interesting to watch.
Vaping?
Is the proliferation.
Do you even know what vaping is?
Listen, even if it's a ribbon cutting, somebody's vaping marijuana while we're doing the ribbon cutting
like
in the police substation.
Is it distilling the fumes or something?
It's like down to oils and stuff.
Oh, please.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
I'm getting old. All right. So you know what? I did not see a cancellation for the 24th meeting.
I think they may have a meeting, but the thing is that passing to a second reading, I think you'd still wouldn't.
No, but I'm just saying in general, I think there might be a meeting.
All right.
We'll find out.
See you next week.
Bye.